Hello, everyone. Oh, I'm so happy to be back with season two. It's been really tough being off for these few months, but I have not been taking time off. I have been working my butt off on this season. I've been doing interviews, recording episodes, researching and writing, and I really hope to make this season even better than the last. There will be more interviews this season, and interestingly, I have a lot of government-run heritage sites. So that's really neat. It's always good to have a place that you can actually go and visit. I have some amazing and very different locations, like a very well-known curios shop in Eastern Canada, a former funeral home turned pub with unreal stories. My mind was truly blown. I'm of course planning a couple histories and mysteries episodes, and I will also be talking about legends, cryptids, and creatures from around Canada. I would also just like to say thank you so much to the listeners that have been steadily joining us since the season finale. And to the returning listeners, thank you so much. And to brand new listeners, welcome. The episode today is all about Black Creek Pioneer Village in Toronto, Ontario. I need to give a quick shout out to Rowena, who is the brand development manager for a company called The Haunted Walk. Now, we're going to hear more from The Haunted Walk in future episodes. But thank you so, so much to her. I can't wait for you all to hear the amazing stories that she shared with me. If you'll remember from the Histories and Mysteries season one finale, I told Brianne about my first malevolent spirit, and it's actually at Black Creek that he resides. So as always, let's get started. Black Creek Pioneer Village is in Toronto, Ontario. This village is a beast. And can I also just point out, what an amazing name. Black Creek? Sounds like out of a Stephen King novel or something. So Black Creek Pioneer Village is comprised of buildings that are both original to the location and also buildings that have been brought in from other areas. Though other buildings may not be original to the location, they are still authentic and still original to the same period in the 1800s. So here's some backstory on the site itself. The family that would make up the heart of Black Creek Pioneer Village were the Stong family. They came to Canada from Pennsylvania. They were part of something called the Loyalist Migration following the American Revolution. Now, a quick history refresher. I know I needed a little one. There were some rebels who sought independence from Britain, and then there were loyalists who felt loyalty to the crown. So I'm going to link an article if you want to know more detail about the who's, what's, where's, and why's, but for the point of today, I'll simplify it. There were many reasons why people became loyalists. There were even some who agreed with the rebels that America had been wronged by the British, but they believed that a revolution was not the answer. Some were loyal to Britain, and others were simply threatened by the American way of life, as it was not kind at that time to Blacks, Indigenous people, or recent immigrants, and they were seeking a better future, and some were just enticed by the promise of free land in Canada. So who knows exactly which reason or reasons the Stongs found themselves loyalists. But they would immigrate to Canada and settle north of Toronto, near what is now Black Creek. In 1816, Daniel Stong built a home for himself and his wife, Elizabeth. Together, they would have 8 children: Mary, Catherine, Jacob, John, Joseph, Michael, Samuel, and Daniel. They would go on to build a second house, which is now known as Second House. They built a school, church, and many other buildings on their land. The Stongs farmed and maintained their land until 1952, when they sold it, after living on the land for more than a century. In 1958, the Metro Toronto and Region Conservation Authority bought the property along with some of the other Stong family buildings, and thus was born Black Creek Pioneer Village. I have to say, if you get a chance to check this place out, you really, really need to. It looks incredible, and I know for myself, I have a growing list of places that I want to visit, and this is definitely one of them. Now, when I was looking into what places I wanted to talk about, I kept seeing Black Creek come up, and stories about this location sounded really cool. So I contacted the village and spoke with an employee there who forwarded me to Rowena. So as I said, Rowena is the brand development manager for Haunted Walk and a former Haunted Walk tour guide herself. So I need to say quickly that Haunted Walk is such a cool company, and you can find them at hauntedwalk.com. And they do walks not only at Black Creek, but so many different locations. And as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to them again about another location that they cover. So at Black Creek Pioneer Village, they are there from about mid-June until end of November. And of course, Rowena says October is a really popular time. So people will come and they'll book walks. And she let me in on a little secret that there's always one weekend in October where the activity seems to ramp up. Now, surprisingly, it's not Halloween. It's not the weekend before Halloween. She says it's actually the weekend right before that. So when the walks are being done, Rowena is usually a staple on the site, doing tickets and acting as support for the guides and guests. Rowena is a believer, but she says that she hasn't had any definitive experiences happen to her. She theorizes that it might be because she wants it too much, which actually I've heard from a couple people. Now, I feel like everyone has an idea of what could convince them of the paranormal. My threshold is obviously way lower than Rowena, because some of the stories that she told me would be more than enough to convince me 100% that I had an experience. So as I talked with Paul Bush last season, everyone has a different idea of definitive proof. So let me know what you would need to see or experience to believe that you have definitive proof. So continuing with our story, she says that back in 2016, when they began tours at the village, they had been provided with content by the site to use in their tours. They had done some initial interviews and different things like that, and she said that their original script was basically entirely made up of content that had been provided to them by the Black Creek team. So experiences that they had had over the years, things that guests had been telling them. So that was great, and they had a really strong tour that year. The tour ran for 4 nights a week, and the guides had so many experiences that the next year, they actually rewrote their entire script. So that just goes to show you how active this location is. They are constantly adding new stories and having experiences. So I wanted to just start off with a spirit that is said to haunt Second House. I mentioned a moment ago that this was the second house built by the Stongs and that they had 8 children. Rowena told me of a playful and mischievous spirit who's believed to reside there. He's called Michael by the staff and the guides, and this is because a known death that occurred in the home was Michael Stong. He died when he was just 16 years old. I was able to confirm this through another source that he was shot in a hunting accident, and they brought him home. He was put in his room upstairs, but unfortunately he did succumb to his injuries. Rowena said that people will hear footsteps upstairs when it's closing time, but of course, no one's there. A Black Creek interpreter told her of a time that he went upstairs to find a rope that was used to section off one of the rooms, swinging back and forth. He said, "Michael, stop that." And the rope abruptly stopped. Rowena said that it also seems that when other teenagers are in the building, they'll notice more energy. So he's definitely trying to get their attention. When I was doing my initial research, another place that I kept seeing pop up online was a place called the Halfway House. So this is called the Halfway House because it was originally located halfway between Toronto and Kingston. It was an inn and a tavern, and it was a great spot for stagecoaches to stop and take a break, and even rest for the night sometimes before making the rest of their journey. It was built by a man named Alexander Thompson, who ran the inn with his wife Marianne. Now, Alexander was a really busy man. Along with being the tavern and inn owner, he was an auctioneer, town council pathmaster, and possibly also a postmaster for a while. So this suggests that Marianne was most likely doing a lot of the work at the inn. And actually, after Alexander's death in 1867, Marianne began to get the inn license herself. So she ran the inn on her own until 1872. Marianne obviously had a connection to the inn. So it shouldn't be a shock when I tell you that Marianne is believed to be the main spirit to haunt the halfway house. A woman in a blue dress has been sighted many times in and out of the building and even walking on the road toward the home. It's with the halfway house that Rowena gave me one of my favorite stories to this day. Truly one of my favorites. Rowena was a part of this experience and tells it like this. One night they had a couple of guests who were late for their tour. So Rowena and her colleague, we'll call Amy just for this story, said no problem, grabbed their flashlights, and since it was the last tour of the night, they said, we'll just catch you up to the group. They were walking along the road into the village with the couple, and suddenly Amy says, there's a woman in an old-fashioned dress, she described it as blue-gray, walking along the road to the halfway house. She said, we all see her, right? The man in the couple said, yes. But both the woman in the couple and Rowena said, no. Amy thought they were messing with her. She turned and caught the look of confusion on Rowena's face and realized that they were being serious. They didn't see this woman. So she began to describe her in more detail. Her hair, how it was styled, the dress, everything. She became more frantic and began running along the road toward the woman she claimed was there. She was shining her flashlight toward this woman in an attempt to prove to the others that she was indeed there. She was convinced it had to have been a staff member of the Black Creek, as they were doing an event of their own that night. But as Rowena put it, there was no one there. I didn't see anyone, she said. In the time it took for Amy to turn back to the group and then back to the road again, the woman was gone. The man of the couple was convinced right along with her. He saw her too, without a doubt. So I wonder what it was about the other half of the group that could not see this woman. And I wonder if this was, in fact, Marianne Johnson. I love this story so much because I believe both sides. I believe when speaking with Rowena that she saw nothing that night. But I asked her if she also believed Amy and the man, that they saw a woman there, and she said absolutely. So let me know what you think and what you would have thought in that moment. I think that's just so interesting that in real time, two people saw a woman plain as day and two people did not. Rowena also said that this past year, they've started to get sightings of a different spirit. The first night she remembers hearing about this other spirit was on a night that they were running a test audience for a new tour that they were hoping to do. Rowena was in the test audience. They were in the front hall of the halfway house, and she said there was another tour out in the village. But because of this test, they wouldn't be coming into the halfway house that night. The host was going through the details of the building when there was a knock at the door. They assumed that it was someone from the tour group, and the host said, let's scare them. I love that lady. So she went to the door and she flung it open, but there was no one there. They thought that was odd, but they let it go. Well, the next day, when Rowena was chatting with the guide that was in the town that previous night with her group, they said, hey, was someone in your group wearing a top hat? Rowena laughed and said, no, I would definitely remember something like that. The tour guide told her that when they were coming back along the street to go to Berwick House, and check out the town map that I'll have on the blog so you can kind of visualize where everyone would have been. A few members of the person's group said that they had seen a man in a top hat walking up to the door at the halfway house. In sharing the details of timing, they determined that this would have been right around the time that they heard the knock on the front door. She said that ever since that night, there have been sightings of a man sitting in the house on one of the couches. Rowena told me of another time when she was taking some photos of the halfway house for social media. The park was empty except for two of her coworkers who were over by the church. And again, check out the map so you can kind of see where things were. And this was a ways from where she was. The only other person was the security guard out in town. And as she was walking, she noticed there was a man walking ahead of her in the dark with no flashlight. She thought it was one of the men out in the village and thought, well, that's rude. They're trying to scare me. Why don't they have their flashlight on? The man was way ahead of her, and she just went out into the halfway house, completed her assignment, came back and heard people coming up behind her. It was all three of the aforementioned men who had been out together. She confronted them about the man she saw with no flashlight, and they assured her they were all together over by the church with their flashlights on. They looked around the whole village thinking maybe someone had snuck in, and no one was there. So very interesting. Maybe this was the top-hatted man. Another one of the famously haunted places at this location is the manse. Now, a manse is a house where the priest would have lived, and it's usually next to the church. The manse in Black Creek is not original to the site. This is the Richmond Hill Manse and was built around 1830 in, you guessed it, Richmond Hill. Now, this location is where people have felt the negative spirit or energy. Some, Rowena says, have even described it as malevolent. So a great story to introduce you to this location happened to a very experienced Haunted Walk employee. This guide had worked in other places that were very, very active and had never had her own experience. She was quite skeptical, Rowena said. So one night, Rowena was in the visitor's center doing ticket sales and helping out with the guides with anything they might need. And if I didn't mention before, Rowena kicks ass. She's obviously very knowledgeable and just seems to be such an integral part of this operation. So anyway, shout out to Rowena. She's awesome. So guides were coming back between their tours as they usually have a couple tours a night. So this experienced guide, who we'll call Amanda for the sake of the story, was there between tours and chatting with another guide that we'll call Erica. Now, Erica tended to always have experiences out in the town. She was telling Amanda and Rowena about how while they were in the manse, a person from her group had noticed a man in the kitchen. He was a dark figure standing in profile, and she noted that he had a hooked nose. As she was telling them this, Amanda backed away saying, No. They asked her what was wrong, and she said that she had been through there with her group right before Erica's group. She also noticed a man in the kitchen, dark figure, profile, hooked nose. Being the skeptic that she is, she convinced herself, there was nothing there, and she went on with her life. So in hearing that someone else had seen the same thing, it really set her off. Another great story from the manse came from a Black Creek employee who took her little niece along for a day at the village. And this was during the day, not a night tour. She was maybe 3 or 4, and they walked up to the manse, and her little niece refused to go in. Why? This little one would only say, "Mean man inside." I asked Rowena if there were any theories of who this mean man could be. She said they have a couple of possibilities. The one that I feel is most likely was a minister named William Jenkins, who was a decorated preacher. He came to be the preacher of a church built in 1821 that would become known as the Pride of Richmond Hill. He was seen as a radical clergyman for the time, and apparently people came from all over to have their babies baptized by him and to be married by him. One story that I found in my research that Rowena also told me was that the good preacher was known as having quite a colorful personality. The story goes that once a man fell asleep during his service. He awoke him by hitting him with the Bible and saying, "If you will not hear the word of God, then feel it." which is hilarious. And wow. In my research, and of course, I will post this image on my website, there's an art rendering done in profile, and you can see a hooked style nose. So this is a definite possibility of who this man could be. So it's hard to know if the presence is truly malevolent. Personally, I feel like malevolence is a really harsh description. We don't know if this is an intelligent haunting or a residual haunting, and it's hard to know for sure, but there definitely are creepy and negative feelings people get from the manse. And in fact, Rowena said that there are two places where people will refuse to go inside and will just politely wait outside, and that is the manse and another place called the Berwick House. So that's a nice little segue, I think. So I'm going to talk next about the Berwick House. This home was another one not originally built on the site. This house was built in 1844 in Berwick, Ontario. I believe it's now known as Woodbridge, and that's really all I was able to find about this home. So, at least for me, I found it hard to kind of track down anything about the owners. The home, however, is believed to be haunted by a woman who lost a child. A woman is seen here, but there have also been sightings of a child as well. Rowena said he's around 7 to 9 years old and is even seen toward the manse and the church cemetery. So Berwick House is one of the most infamous and most haunted at Black Creek. There was a book called Haunted Ontario 3, Ghostly Historic Sites, Inns, and Miracles by Terry Boyle. And there's some really great stories in here. You can actually read it online, and I'll have a link on my website if you want to read more about some of the other experiences. The book outlines a lot of encounters people have had with the woman presence here, seeing her in the kitchen, the bedroom upstairs, and there's also a baby cradle that's said to evoke strong feelings of sadness and loss. And I'm sure this is something that lends support to the theory that a woman lost a child. Now, I will mention, we don't know if this woman is connected to the cradle or to Berwick House. This is kind of something that Rowena and I had kind of talked about, is with so many objects and original objects from way back when and coming from different places, you never know if something is attached to an object or to the building or to the land itself. So keep that in mind. Rowena didn't talk a lot about the woman, but more about the little boy. She says that one time the Toronto manager of Haunted Walk was at Black Creek helping to run an event. So let's call the Toronto manager Shelley. So Shelley was sitting on the porch of the halfway house, which is kitty corner to Berwick House. And again, check out that map. The tour was out in the village and Rowena was doing ticket sales again when she got a call from Shelley. She said, "Are there any kids on the tour tonight?" Rowena said she didn't remember any, but she would double check. So she checked all of the tickets and confirmed, nope, no child tickets had been redeemed. She got back to Shelley and said, "No, there are no kids out on the tour. Why?" Shelley said, "There's a little boy standing in front of Berwick House." Rowena was confused and she said, "What?" Now, there was a wedding going on in the visitor center. So Shelley asked if there were any kids in there. Rowena said there might have been a couple, but she was sure that none of them had left the visitor center. So Rowena said, "Can you get closer?" Keeping Rowena on the phone, Shelley stood up and began walking closer to the building. She could see him plain as day, standing in front of the building. She was getting closer and closer, and suddenly, she said, "He's gone." He had literally vanished right before her. And she was another skeptic who had never experienced anything that convinced her of the paranormal. That would do the trick, would it not? This past year, one of the guides came back and was telling Rowena about a man in his group who told him that he recently took his little girl to the village during the day. They went into Berwick House and she went ducking under one of the ropes into a room. So he got her out and said, "You're not allowed to go in there. Don't do that." She said, "Well, why is he allowed to?" and she pointed into the room. He didn't see anyone in there, but his daughter said she saw a little boy in the room. They actually went into the halfway house next, and she started ducking into one of the rooms again, only to run out, ran over to her dad, where she said there was a mean lady who said it was her room and she needed to get out. I think it goes without saying, no one was in there. So maybe she came in contact with Marianne. Like I had mentioned before, the little boy of Berwick House is not only spotted at the house, but he's also spotted near the cemetery, church, and manse, which is all one area down the road from Berwick House. People claim to see a little boy around this area, and in some instances, it's like he's even playing hide-and-seek with them. He'll sometimes appear to tag on to the end of a tour group, and then he'll just disappear. One of the haunted walk tour guides was recently counting out his tour when they left the manse, making sure everyone's there, and he noticed a child duck behind someone in the tour. But he didn't reappear. It was then that he realized he didn't have any kids on his tour that night. So that's crazy. That's so spooky. So this brings me to the end of this episode. I'm so happy to be back, and I really hope you guys enjoyed the story from Black Creek Pioneer Village. If you or someone you know has gone to the village and had an experience, let me know. The experiences that I've talked about today are literally the tip of the iceberg. Rowena told me that almost every single day they hear of a new experience. So I would like to just say thank you so much again to Rowena and to the Haunted Walk for sharing these experiences and these stories. Make sure if you are lucky enough to go on a haunted walk there, or even just visit the village during the day, that you let them know where you heard about them. It's always great when people give me the privilege of sharing their stories from a location, so it's nice to know when people are brought in through listening to the Real Scary podcast. Remember that it's hauntedwalk.com, and you can also follow them on Instagram at thehauntedwalk, and I will of course have links to everything on the blog. Always check out the blog for photos, more stories, and check on the map tour tab for more information on how you can visit this village. This can all be found on my website, realscarypodcast.com. If you have your own stories or suggestions, comments, or you just want to say hi, you are more than welcome to. You can email me at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Real Scary Podcast, and make sure to subscribe and to favorite my show on whichever platform you listen. Reviews are always helpful, so please show me some love in that way. I would really appreciate it. Until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.